Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Wilson is joined by Dr. Jeffrey Orell. Dr. Orell is Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at the Smilow Cancer Hospital Derby Care Center. Here's Lynn Wilson.
Let's have you start off by telling us a little bit about what the care centers are.
Sure. On December 31st last year, I was part of the biggest private medical oncology practice, I think, in New England. As of January 1st, we all became part of the Smilow Cancer Hospital Cancer Care Centers. So for our group, we had, I think, six offices and 22 doctors that delivered care in the community. Now we're part of the Smilow Cancer Hospital and provide care locally to our patients with a very close affiliation to the mothership, the Smilow Hospital.
And what does this really mean for patients today compared to 2 years ago, for example? What might be different for them, if anything?
Well, I think first and foremost, what all of us have learned being in private practice is that in the community, our patients rely on us and look to us to give care. What I think the amalgamation with Smilow does is allow us to provide local care, but have ready access in a very positive way with a tertiary care, high-powered cancer center with all that they can bring to the table. So it allows us to take our patients from local care and immediately get them involved to what we think is state-of-the-art 2012 care seamlessly in a very positive way.
And obviously, your practice prior to the alignment with Smilow, I've known of your practice and yourself for many, many years. I always considered your practice completely state-of-the-art. Does the combination really enhance multidisciplinary aspects, access to perhaps clinical trials that might not have been quite as accessible before?
I think it's done a lot of things. Thanks for the compliment that we gave state-of-the-art care. But we recognized in private practice that throughout the 25 or so years I've been affiliated with what used to be medical oncology and hematology, we couldn't provide total state-of-the-art care. There were things that we knew in private practice as private doctors that if we were going to give good care to our patients, we needed to rely on our colleagues at a tertiary care center. What comes to mind is bone marrow transplantation. We didn't do bone marrow transplantation, but we had our friends at Yale that we had, I think, an excellent relationship with, that when we needed to get our patients to Yale, it was an easy transition. The good news is now we're all in the same division. So not only did a simple referrals like transplantation become easier, but as oncology is changing its face and new things are developing, we really can get people to care that we would not have been able to get them to. One always hears about town gown issues, perhaps right, with a negative connotation,
right,
but there is no town gown. I think the model we've set up is we are one institution. Each of us has our role, but at the end of the day, we're trying to really provide outstanding care to an individual patient. And this amalgamation really gets us there in a very terrific way.
Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. What malignancies do you see most often? And what's your background? How did you get involved in this field?
Well, back in the old days, when I was a resident in internal medicine, was the time we were deciding if we wanted to be specialists. And initially, I was interested in hematology. This was 1979, 1980, and what had evolved and was continuing to evolve is hematology was no longer usually a separate entity, but hematology-oncology training was combined. The overlap were cancer with such hematologic malignancies like leukemia, lymphoma. I liked intellectual hematology, but I thought there was a great challenge in oncology. So the two specialties seemed right, and that's what I became when I grew up, a hematologist-oncologist, as a generalist. Typically, in our group, we didn't specialize in any one area. We had areas of interest, but we saw generally what walked in through the front door and through referral, and that typically is the common cancers, lung cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, and as well as both benign and malignant hematologic problems.
And has that remained still the balance even after the combination and amalgamation with Smilo?
I think certainly for most of us that are outside of the immediate New Haven area, we still are able to do our general hematology oncology. That's what our community needs. Closer in to New Haven, I think there are people that are developing areas of specialty that really work well with what existed at Yale.
Now, obviously, a big part of your practice has been developing close relationships with your patients, making sure they're taken care of, making sure that they're comfortable. Discuss a little bit with our listeners why this is such a critical piece of oncology care, in addition, of course, to the medical expertise piece.
I remember when I was a medical student and walked into a room and I was given the assignment to tell a patient something, a diagnosis, a treatment, and I always remember I used we. I never came in and said I said we, because I remember as a medical student I wasn't sure of myself and I was representing an opinion that was a group opinion or the attending's position. But I realized quite early on in practice when I was the attending, when I was the doctor, that I is very important, not in an egotistical bad sense, but patients look to you for direction, they look for care, they look for the future, and I think it's critical to establish that relationship that you're going to go to bat for that patient and you're going to try to provide excellent care in the context of a team approach.
What do you think are some of the concerns patients have after receiving their diagnosis and going into the treatment program? Obviously, this answer could be complicated. And how do you manage that?
Well, I think the first thing that's on everyone's mind, whether it's spoken or not spoken, is what the future holds. You learn early on in this business that not everybody wants to ask that question initially. They may take some time, but when you're given a diagnosis like cancer, given all that surrounds that diagnosis, given all the media attention, given what people perceive to be true about cancer, they want to know what their chances are. They may not verbalize it, but they want to know. And I think you answer that issue in an appropriate fashion as to what the patient can handle from day one, day two, and then as you have that relationship. I think that's always on people's minds. But on top of that, I think everyone wants to know that the therapy that you're giving them is going to work. But I think more important is, what am I in for in terms of side effects? I usually tell patients that I know there are a lot of TV shows out there about chemotherapy, and rest assured, when you put on a TV show about chemotherapy, you got to make it bad. So I try very hard to give people a very balanced description of what's in store for them with the side effects, because I think that's on their mind. I think patients also want to know what effect it's going to have on their immediate lives. How are they going to be getting up in the morning? Are they going to be able to work? Are they going to be able to take care of their families? What are their friends and their families going to think of them as they're going through chemotherapy? And the biggest thing I've learned is people are afraid of the unknown. And I often tell people that, in my opinion, the worst day is the night before their first treatment. That's when they don't know what's coming. And all the TV shows, all the radio ads, all their friends offering advice and warning them what's coming really comes to a head. Once they get going, as a general rule, it's a little bit better than what they perceived. And people have a terrific ability to adapt. And I think they get through it. But the night before the first one is always a very difficult night.
Have you found, Jeff, that over the years, patients' expectations or behaviors have changed? Obviously, with electronic media, television, internet, access, much easier access to information. Are the kinds of questions that patients come to you with today different than perhaps 20 years ago, or are their expectations different because of perhaps the knowledge they've gleaned before their office visit with you?
Yeah, I think it's a complicated answer. I think the electronic age is very good. I always like it when patients are actively involved in their care, where they want to understand what's going on. I think the internet is, for all of our lives, has some good qualities and some bad qualities. I think it can arm people with very good information, can prompt them to ask very good questions, and likewise, it depends what you read and depends who's
right,
writing it, and it's unfiltered data that gets to the patient. But in the end, patients, I think, still want the same thing. What do I got? What are my chances? How are you going to treat me? And what are we looking forward to? So I think it's a real variability of what comes in with patients. And my job, or any of our jobs, is to understand what that patient's really asking and trying to give the answer they're looking for.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right on. It can be very complicated. And sometimes, unfortunately, patients have been reading the internet for, say, a week or two before they come and see you. And in many cases, it enhances their anxiety because of what they've read. Because, of course, when you have a new diagnosis, you automatically assume that you must be in the worst situation. And so you gravitate toward the bad statistics, the worst prognosis, and that sort of thing. So it can be tricky and difficult sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Tell us a little bit, Jeff, about the center in Derby and what happens there from day to day. Take us through a typical day and a patient-type experience.
Sure. I think to begin with, Griffin Hospital has been around for a while, and one of its strongest points is they've adopted what's called a plane tree philosophy. Simply, it's a philosophy where not only you expect it to get good medical and nursing care, but the environment in which you provide that care is very important to the immediate outcome of people and to their families, but to the long-term outcome. So I think a lot of time was spent in building the cancer center at Derby. And not that I'm prejudiced, but I know a lot of the other offices, and I know all. It's really just a magnificent facility to take care of patients. But I think along with that, when we were building this and constructing it, I think we really, it was very important to create a multidisciplinary center, but not in name. There are plenty of centers out there that call themselves cancer centers, and you walk in the building, to the right is medical oncology, which is what I do, and to the left is radiation therapy, which is what you do, and that's the cancer center. I think Griffin's gone out of its way not to do that. There is medical oncology on the right, there is radiation therapy on the left, but there is a tremendous number of other healthcare professionals. For example, the nurses, the phlebotomists, the secretaries, the people that give Reiki therapy, our patient navigator, the person who gives foot massages, our pastoral care people, our psychology people, and who am I leaving out? And even our financial advisors that try to deal with the entirety of the situation, just not with the medical oncology, the radiation aspects. And I really think we do a good job with that. I think people really get treated holistically in a very positive way.
Have you found it helpful after the center was constructed and you had all of these excellent team members in one place? Was that helpful for patients as opposed to having radiation oncology in one location, medical oncology in a different office, people spread all over the place?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you walked into where I practice in the medical oncology suite, it's a busy place. It's just not my immediate staff, but all these people I mentioned interacting with people. And I think they get a real sense that they're being taken care of and that it's just not what chemotherapy drugs I'm giving them, but how their cancer is affecting them and how we're going to make their lives better. And it's palpable. And I think people really appreciate that.
Have you found that more recently, Jeff, patients, maybe because of some newer drugs, newer medicines, newer therapies, and just our support systems, would you say that the general oncology patient is spending more of their treatment time outside the hospital, for example, compared to, say, 20 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. When we were kids in this business, oncology was really an inpatient discipline. That is, the majority of the care, patients were in hospitals, starting from their workup and were kept days in the hospital to actually the chemotherapy. That was in hospital. And I think all of us in the business are firm believers that it's good to see me, it's good to be in the office. Time is better spent not seeing me and not in my office as long as care is given. And there's been a real change in what we do in the office. Medical oncology for most diseases is an outpatient specialty. We can give extremely sophisticated care in the office. We can support them in ways we never would have thought possible. So we keep them out of hospital for their treatments, and we've got ways to prevent people from coming to hospital. We're much better at avoiding hospitalizations. And I think that's really been a very big difference and very positive for the patients. Less is more. Being in a hospital, if you have to be, if you're getting certain therapies, you're mandated to be there. But it's better to be sleeping in your own bed than sleeping in a hospital bed.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about cancer care in the community with Dr. Jeffrey Orell.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there's new hope. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined today by my guest, Dr. Jeffrey Orell, and we're discussing cancer care in the community. Jeff, we've talked already a fair amount about some changes. We've talked about the relatively newly constructed center in Derby that you're working at. Tell us a little bit more about cancer care in the community, and you mentioned a little bit about this, but let's revisit some of the real changes that have happened in the last 25 years, and maybe what's better about things now compared to 10, 20 years ago.
Sure. Well, we talked already about the importance of keeping people out of hospitals, and we're really doing very well at that. I also think that we've changed our attitude, perhaps, that cancer is not an immediate up or down, yes or no, but maybe viewing cancer as a chronic disease. That I personally have high blood pressure. I don't know what caused it. As long as I take my medicines, my blood pressure is terrific. We're seeing perhaps in cancer not the need to make it all go away, but to live with it, to take people and put them on high blood pressure medicines, to give them therapies that may not remove all their cancer, but allow them to have hopefully normal longevity, not on serious side effects, and live with that disease rather than it's either cured or it's not cured. And I think that's crept in a very positive way that we take care of patients. I also think we alluded to earlier about the multidisciplinary approach to cancer. I think that's singularly one of the most important things that we've done. We've taken out, it's just not doctor and chemotherapy, but a multidisciplinary team dedicated to improving our lot with cancer. And I think that's good. As I've said to patients a lot, I've never taken care of lung cancer, ever. But ever, never. I take care of people that have lung cancer. And that's a very different view of things. It's a different approach to people. And I think we've enlisted many people that can help take care of people that happen to have cancer. And that's improved outcome, and it's improved quality for patients in significant ways.
We focus a lot in discussing cancer, patients with cancer, on how we're doing better with cures, how we are more successful in treating certain types of cancers that patients have. One thing we don't talk a lot about, and I'd be interested in your perspectives on this, is how we're doing better in terms of preventing and managing side effects from the treatments that we give. And what's been some of your personal perspective on that?
I think to take the latter part of your question first, we're certainly able better to support patients through these therapies, whether it's better anti-nausea medicines, able to see them in the office and prevent dehydration with fluids, a multidisciplinary approach. But I think we've made it much easier to tolerate what we do to people. And that really changes the landscape on how people are going to deal with this disease. I think that's just been a major advance that we've experienced.
Do you think it's that we have newer treatments that are just more tolerable? Is it that we have new medicines that are better at counteracting effects? I know in my field in radiation oncology, we are much better at targeting our targets than we were 20 years ago. And so we do a better job of hitting what we're actually aiming at and do a better job of avoiding what we don't want to hit. We have new medications to counteract effects, and perhaps some of the drugs that we're using therapeutically have been better tailored?
Yeah, everything you just said, yes, 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 and yes. I mean, we have better supportive drugs. We're using therapies, and the word targeted is a very important word in oncology. We're really trying to get at what's really going on with the patient with their cancer and addressing on a genetic level, on a molecular level, what's going on. Some of the therapies, there are more pills, which I think oral forms of medicine, which people always jump up and down about till they hear that the pills can have its side effects as well. But I think we've approached making quality better in both directions. The medicines are more directed, and our ability to support is infinitely improved.
The community setting, why is it really so important to have centers like these, like where you work in the community, offering this kind of care to patients? Obviously, some people might say, well, you know, I can go to the big tertiary center. It's not that far away. But what do you feel are some of the advantages to patients being able to get this level of care very close to home?
I think there are strengths, and I'll also mention what the weaknesses might have been. I think the strength is I have to earn my keep with patients every time I walk into the room. I was a private doctor. I had to assure them I was going to work hard for them, and I was going to be responsible. So the advantage to coming to someone like me is I was going to be there for them, not the big institution. I was going to take care of them. I also told them I thought in a lot of diseases I was every bit as good as the Memorials, the Yales, and the Dana-Farbers on most of what I did. But I had to be honest with my patient, myself, to know where that line had to be drawn. I always can't deliver best care, and I hope I'd always refer that patient to someone that was providing a more novel, a better approach. With our cancer centers now, I believe for a lot of diseases, I can provide outstanding state-of-the-art care. But I also know I can't do that for all instances. And now my colleagues are ready and waiting to deliver them state-of-the-art 2012 medicine that is a private local doctor I can't deliver. So I get to sleep well at night knowing that I'm thinking I'm doing the best for my patient, whether it's in my office or referring them into the tertiary care center where things are done that I can't provide.
Typically, Jeff, if you have a patient that you feel needs to be hospitalized for whatever reason, is that typically done also close to home in the Derby-Griffin area?
I think I'm going to give you the same answer. I think Griffin Hospital, like a lot of small community hospitals, can't offer tertiary care level care. The example I would use is acute leukemia. That's the disease requiring lengthy hospitalizations, very aggressive therapies, and a need for really specialized support. I can't do that at Griffin. Have been able to do that for 20 years. So I'll say to my patients, we can't do it here. Best care has to be delivered at a tertiary care center. That's what you owe the patient. Some things I can deliver care. As I've said to people, Griffin is a bunch of bricks. Yale's a bunch of bricks. And if I admit you at Griffin or I admit you at Yale, which I can do, I'm still the one writing the order. So if you trust me, you should trust me in either place. So at a local community hospital, lots of things can be taken care of. But some things can't. It's got to be recognized, and you got to get people where they're going to get best care.
And have you had patients who perhaps are concerned saying, you know, Dr. Orell, I want to stay in the community. You're saying maybe I have to go to Yale, for example. You still have the ability to interact with that patient here at Smilo, for example. So I want to emphasize how it's not as if the connection to you is necessarily lost just because they may be admitted to the hospital outside of their own close community.
Right. I hope it wouldn't be lost, but I would also tell my patients that I'm referring them to another doctor that I've reached the limit of my expertise, my ability to take care of them, whether it's the hospital or me, and that your best chance, your best care will be delivered at Smilo by this doctor, and I have full confidence. So I'm not abandoning you. I'm doing what's right. Most people understand that, and I think they're appreciated in the end.
Yeah. Folks talk about clinical trials. We talk about clinical trials a lot more recently than we did even 25 years ago. Tell us your thoughts about clinical trials in the community versus at Smilo, for example, and how clinical trials can be available to patients in the community. They may not necessarily have to come to a big tertiary center.
That's correct. I think I always owe my patient options and, in my opinion, what best therapy is. I always use the analogy to patients. If your kid has strep throat and they don't have penicillin allergy, everyone, like me, knows give them penicillin. But cancer care is a lot more complicated than that. There are some cancers that we have well worked out treatments that everyone accepts as correct. That's probably not a patient that needs a clinical trial right away. But we need to improve. We need to push the envelope of our knowledge. We need to learn what's next best therapy. And that only can be done on clinical trials. private doctors, local practitioners don't experiment on people. We do this through a very sophisticated and organized protocol system. So I'm the biggest believer that we've got to put patients on protocols, and we could talk about what level of protocols, but people need to know the options for that and should be referred in a very appropriate way. We'll be able to do some clinical trials in Derby. We're working out the kinks right now, but some trials are well-designed that would do very well in a community hospital. Lots of other trials, what we call phase one or phase two trials, need to be at the institution, need to be at Smilo, run by a few doctors, so those doctors can help me down the road tell patients what the best therapy is and push new treatments and understand what new treatments are. So I think protocols are essential to certainly cancer care, and all of us in the community need to support it.
And patients should also understand that if a clinical trial, a clinical protocol is being offered in the community, it's been vetted by other physicians, vetted by some sort of institutional review board, and presumably the quality of care and what's going to happen in that clinical trial in the community setting should really be identical to what's going to happen at, say, Smilo or Dana-Farber, for example.
It should. And those of us in the community go through rigorous training to be able to say that. And we know that doing bad clinical trials is worse than doing no clinical trials. We've got to keep our standards up so when reviews of our protocols are ultimately looked at, when the FDA looks at it, that we can stand by extraordinarily high-level design protocols and we're administered to the letter of the law where there's no doubt about the results. That's the only acceptable letter. And so any trial opened in our cancer care centers will have gone through that rigorous process.
What sort of changes did you perceive from some of your patients when there must have been some people that you were seeing regularly, perhaps in the midst of their treatment, when you went from your older facilities to the new facility? What sort of reactions did you see from patients?
You mean in the cancer center or the amalgamation with Smilo?
Your cancer center.
Oh, they were thrilled. I mean, we lived in standard medicine office buildings that were not, they were nice, they were clean. But when you walk into the Taj Mahal, certainly their biggest response was when they were on the tours just before we opened it. Everybody's excited. It was terrific to be in there. It just added a level of improvement, and they understood it was done for them. There was great community pride in that cancer center. The Valley takes pride in its hospital and was extremely generous in supporting that cancer care center. So when it was about to open, people were just so excited.
And we had mentioned a little bit before about the multidisciplinary nature, and it's not just about the physician providers, but other folks providing other kinds of services. Are the non-medical services used pretty frequently by patients?
Yes, and we encourage it. I mean, other than the standard brochures, all of the healthcare professionals are wandering in and out just waiting to help somebody, and you can feel it. I think people really have gotten a sense that they're doctors and nurses and all the others, all for one purpose, to make their lot better.
How does someone, for example, who you're seeing for the first time, perhaps with a new diagnosis, how do they make arrangements for some of these other services? Is it something that you bring up with them? Do they ask about it? What sort of process do they go through if they want to experience some Reiki or speak to the dietitian, these sorts of things?
I think it's variable, but certainly if they don't bring it up, we offer it. People are very friendly, outgoing, and those people you mentioned, the Reiki therapists, nutritionists, go around looking for business, go around looking to support people. So by hook or crook, whether it's word of mouth, direct contact, people really understand that, you know, we're a soup to nuts organization and really try to provide this.
Dr. Jeffrey Aral is Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at the Smilo Cancer Hospital Derby Care Center. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.